This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to La Liga Weekly. Barca are back. Super Copa winners with a resounding victory over Real Madrid. Financial winners over those stupid old debts. And moral winners over the snipers and the conspirators. Joan Laporte has been talking publicly this morning, skirting that fine line between defiance and paranoia. They have, and I quote, followed a detailed strategic plan. And for those of you who claim otherwise, you're part of a conspiracy, external and internal, who are out to destroy Barcelona, a club that stands against fascism for grace and beauty, Catalan identity, and spending 60 million euros on players they don't need. An attack on the president is an attack on the club, and no, he is not a megalomaniac. You're just acting out of bad faith, ignorance, or both. It was lucky they weren't able to sell Rafinha, which was, I guess, part of the detailed strategic plan. The question for now is, are Hansi Flick's team back to their August through November early season form, in which case winning the league is very much on? Real Madrid went to Saudi Arabia to demonstrate to a whole new audience that it's a good idea to recruit some actual defenders to your team. That right back they've got has no clue how to defend. Just wait till Trent Alexander-Arnold rides to the rescue. For all of the Clasico drama, the best team in the first half of the season has been Atletico Madrid. 14 consecutive victories. They've got Elche in the Cup, Leganés at the weekend, and then literally next week, 7 days from now, the Champions League. Honestly, it is back. Please stop. We've got 8 La Liga games to review and a grand total of 14 goals. Maybe we do need the stardust of the great and the good after all. Terry Gibson is here. He's caught up with it all, Terry, now finally, haven't you, with the chance to watch it all. We will start with the... We're going to break our contractual obligation and not talk about... We have no contract. We're not talk about La Liga. We're going to talk about the Super Cup because... For all we moan about it, it's in Saudi, it's another contrived Clasico, it's ruined the La Liga weekend, blah, blah, blah. Still a good game, wasn't it? It was hugely entertaining, starting with Mbappe doing exactly what we... This is what we want.
What he does.
Wasn't it? When you think, Real Madrid are signing Mbappe, immediately comes to mind the kind of goal that he scored. But then Barca bit back absolutely spectacularly. Obviously, we'll have to talk about the Real Madrid defending at some point. But in terms of entertainment and two teams going at it, it was brilliant.
Oh, it was super. I mean, it really was. And it's always amazes me because of being English and being involved in English football in my life that they take it so serious. I guess when it's a Clasico, it doesn't matter whether it's the Spanish Super Cup or whatever. The rivalry is always thrives. And this game had everything, because when Real Madrid score after 5 minutes, you could see there had been a couple of counter-attacks before that. So Barcelona in their style, Real Madrid in their style. And I once Mbappe scores, I thought, oh, this is going to be a tough night for Barcelona. Who could have predicted it was going to be 4-1 at half-time? It was a complete turnaround. And both teams, you know, tried to stick to their styles. And that led to that fantastic goal from Mbappe. I have to mention Vinicius, though. Dreadful run from Vinicius to drag the defenders across and to get into the path. Mbappe almost, and beating all the other Barcelona players, almost had to dribble around Vinicius as well. But he still had the skill and the ability and the pace to beat the last defender and thrash it home. So that was brilliant. And Mbappe is coming through a little bit of a tough time this season, but I've always thought And I'm not alone. I spoke to Gaetan Mendieta, spoke to Albert Ferreira during the season, and we all tended to agree that whilst people were criticising him, we thought he was doing all right. Mm. You know, it's a new league, new country. It's not easy to fit in, slightly different position. And we all tended to think that the same, along the same lines, that he's not been a disaster. He gets blamed. He's missed a couple of penalties. He gets blamed if Real Madrid don't win a game because he's the new player. But in general, we thought his performances so far this season have been more than good. So in this one, the signs were really good. He picked up an ankle injury, which kind of hampered him. And then Real Madrid fell apart. That's the only explanation for it. You can look at Real Madrid's lineup that they play the three up front and Bellingham high up, which leaves them light in midfield. And Barcelona's midfield, which is astonishing when you look at the midfield of Barcelona now, Gavi, Pedri, Marc Casado, Frankie de Jong, not even getting involved in the game, not even getting a sub appearance. And you look at it and you think that two of them cost nothing and Pedri cost next to nothing. And you just look at it and you think that's the future of Barcelona in that midfield trio is assured. They were brilliant, that midfield, the three midfield. And then you top that off with the overall performances of the front three, of which one of them, Rafinha, it's unbelievable. It literally is unbelievable this season, his form, because we all thought he was going to be sold. He was one that they could have probably got their money back on. They paid about 60 for him, and you're thinking they can get the 64 back for him. There'll be a club in the Premier League that take him. A few clubs were interested. And then that 60 million, they could probably go and spend the 50 of it on Nico Williams. We all thought that was nailed on.
Part of the plan. It was a detailed strategic plan.
There is that. Trust me, there is no strategic plan. I promise you. But somehow they get through. But Rafinha's form, I can't think of a better player in the world. And I'm reluctant to use that phrase because I hear it every week when I'm watching some of the English football. There's always the best goalie in the world, the best centre-back in the world, best striker in the world, best team in the world. So I very rarely use that. But no one's playing better in the world than Rafinha at the moment. And the goals, his assists, the way he carried the medical bag off from the doctor, which I'm actually down with him, to be honest, because since when has it been okay to perform a full strapping of an ankle on the pitch during a match?
Yes. No. Yeah, so it was Mbappe, wasn't it? It went down. Yeah. And Hansi Flick rolling his eyes in a kind of, I'm getting used to this Spanish football kind of thing now. Because, you know,
I've never seen that before. Mm. Head wounds, yes, if you don't want to pick the player up and move him to the side of the pitch, I get that. But to take boots off, socks off, shin pads off, and then to get strappings out and stuff, that's a 10-minute job. It's if done properly, that's not something you can do in time.
While
everyone waits. Yeah. But it was quite funny that Rafinha picked the medical bag up and took it off, and you see the doctors looking around for a pair of scissors, and they're on the... But a touchline. But Rafinha's form is... I mean, Lamine Yamal takes the headlines.
Yeah.
Because he's 17 years old. And it's just... But Lamine Yamal, I put a post out on social media. Lamine Yamal, full stop, is a world-class footballer. One of the best in the world. Irrespective of his age.
Yeah.
We're not saying it now. Look how good he is. And he's only 17. Look how good he is because he's only 17. He's just a brilliant footballer. And he was... great to watch in this match, but Rafinha was the one that he's become a leader as well, from a player that was on the fringes that maybe was possibly being sold and moved on. And it's not just last summer, it's been pretty much since he's been at the club and they've had these money situations. His name's always been linked with a possible sale because he's one that they could get money for. But now he's just become a leader. He's such an important player for Barcelona. And everything he does, I mean, his work rate. The goal he scores with a head, that's something I didn't expect to see. It was a fantastic, technically perfect finish. Yeah,
and a great cross, because it comes out of nowhere, doesn't it? For all of the build-up play on some of the others, it's Koundé, isn't it? And he just whips the cross in from deep.
Laces.
Yeah.
Diagonal cross with power.
And Rafinha attacks it brilliantly. It also highlights the fact.
Yeah, he's I know you're going to say Lucas Vazquez. there's someone there.
But even to be fair, Lucas Vazquez is hopeless in that. But I think a proper defender I don't know how you would have defended against
him. He might have blocked the run. Yeah. Like, I think that might, he might have put some sort of physical presence up to block the run, to not make it as easy as a training session.
Yeah.
Koundé crossing it, unopposed, Rafinha running and heading it goalwards. It's the second time it happened as well.
Yeah.
There was already a warning. And Courtois made a really good save from a similar attack as well.
That was really, wasn't it? I think that might have led to the Mbappe goal. That might have been really early on, wasn't it? Yeah.
But it is Barcelona. I mean, it's Araujo's back fit. Nico Martinez picked up an injury. Balde scores a goal and looks superb. Chesney, apart from his sending off, which was unlucky on his part, but he looks to be solid enough if they do need him. It was unfortunate for Iñaki Peña that he comes on and his first piece of action probably should have done better with the free kick from...
Yeah, I don't quite know where he went for the free kick.
No, it's east side of the goal, clearly. Yeah. And it was right in the corner.
Mm.
So he, one of those where I think the goalkeeper just places a little bit of weight on the other side of his body.
But then he did make a brilliant save. It was a bit... The only... My only downside of the game was that after that, because Rodrigo scores that free kick to make it 5-2, Barca are down to 10.
Yep.
And I'm expecting more. I'm sort of hoping for more from Real Madrid for the last 20 minutes.
I thought the comeback was on.
Yeah.
I have to be honest, because there was plenty of time, there was half an hour to go against 10 men. I thought if they get another one, that's going to be really interesting.
Mm.
Then it would make life difficult for Barcelona, but there was no hint of a comeback from Real Madrid after that. But we have to talk a bit as... Barcelona were brilliant in every aspect, which is really confusing when you consider their recent form.
Yeah.
It really is. And I was watching Albert Ferrer discuss the game and saying that they have a problem defending against teams that defend in a low block, that drop deep and have bodies back behind the ball, like Las Palmas, like Leganés. Whereas against Real Madrid, he said that Real Madrid emptied the midfield out, which they kind of did, to be honest. When Camavinga probably should have been sent off. Valverde was putting out fires all over the place, whether it was in the left-back position, the right-back position, the right-wing, left-wing position. And that's where Barcelona dominated, which then leads to talented, super-talented strikers having a bit of room, Lewandowski dropping deep. There was no defensive midfield player for Real Madrid. Sometimes I was really surprised when the ball was played from back to front, Lewandowski had dropped off and picked up the ball and was able to turn so easy because the centre-backs didn't want to go in with him. And there was no midfield player. Camavinga and Valverde were charging about all over the place, trying to cover all the gaps. So there was a lack of a disciplined shape from Real Madrid. It did appear as Ancelotti thought, we'll just go and beat them and play the way we do, and that'd be enough. And at the moment, it's clearly not working because it's 9-2 in aggregate with two games this season between Barcelona and Real Madrid, which is, when you consider Real Madrid in the better position in the league table, Barcelona's form of late has been awful. Going into this game, I probably thought Real Madrid were heavy favourites, to be honest. And yet, Barcelona confound you by turning upside down and being absolutely brilliant. And then you think, I just watched them recently against Las Palmas and Leganés, and they're awful. Slow, predictable, but they turn up the heat when it comes to the Clásico. So can they do that? Can they get back in the title race? It's going to be difficult. I mean, there's 6 points behind Atletico.
Yeah.
They're 5 behind Real Madrid. All of a sudden, with those games in hand being played.
Yeah. But only a matter of weeks ago, they were top, comfortably top. The 6th of November or something, wasn't it? I think they won. Was that the game? That might have been the last Champions League.
I think the Champions League, they scored five. The first points they dropped.
Yeah.
They'd flown for it. And there was a massive gap. And then they win the Clásico. Atleti were dropping points all over the place. They can turn around, as we've seen. Atleti have turned it around, and can Atleti maintain this winning streak that they're on for a few more weeks? They may possibly can, but there will be bumps in the road for Simeone and Atleti. Will there be bumps in the road for Real Madrid while they're playing Tchouaméni and Lucas Vazquez in defence? Yes, there will be. I would even go as far as say while they're playing Ferland Mendy as well. I think Fran García has to play. He's clearly the better candidate to be the left back for Real Madrid. And one for the long-term future as well. I think he is the left-back version of Danny Carvajal. I really do. I think he gets forward. He defends really well. He's a good defender. He's tenacious. He's a competitive player. So I think he should be the regular left-back for Real Madrid. But they do. It highlights the fact that Real Madrid can't not do anything about the right back position. And they're going to play Valverde there in big games. They'll play Lucas Vasquez. If nothing happens, Vasquez will play against Espanyol and Leganes and teams like that, and Valladolid. And it'll be all right because they dominate possession. There's not too much defending to do. But in you know, when they play better teams in La Liga and when they play in the Champions League in big games, I expect Valverde to be right back, which then means he's missing from midfield.
Yeah, they have to address it. I know we've been banging on about this for you know, transfer window.
Danny Carvajal got injured.
Couple of years.
I mean, we were talking about a backup for Danny Carvajal, a right back. Yeah. Anyway,
and they were short of centre backs before the injury to Eder Militao.
Yeah.
So they were already short, and it undoubtedly has contributed to the problem. I think there's a little bit of bad luck. Carvajal's injury was bad luck, but some of them were definitely overload injuries that they're.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's: cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
Their players get.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, he's dreadful bad luck. Militao is awful bad luck. Alaba is on his way back, but it's going to take him a month or two to get back to full speed. He's a fantastic centre-back. But you can't blame him every game for the rest of the season soon as he comes back from an ACL.
And he's old. So you don't know how good someone is going to be when they're old coming back from an injury.
I guess Real Asensio is the other one.
It's an unknown, isn't it? Yeah.
And also it highlights the absence of Nacho, who's so important that wherever he played.
Yeah.
Right back, centre-back, left-back.
Yeah, for years he was filling in gaps.
Yes, and did it to a really high level. And Chiumani hasn't played well all season, whether it's been in midfield and now at centre-back.
Yeah.
So he's out of form.
He defends like a centre-back, like a midfielder, in that he'll just sort of wave a leg. He doesn't defend in that sort of last-ditch, no way past me kind of way.
Rudiger's brilliant.
Yeah. The only...
He's not my favourite player, but he is a brilliant centre-back for Real Madrid.
Right, other question. Lucas Vázquez, how many games has Lucas Vázquez now played as a right back? 100? 200?
Yeah.
Why isn't he better at it?
It comes to instinct, I guess, doesn't it? Your defensive instinct. He's still, even in this game, I'm watching him, his problem is defending. So his solution to it is just run forward and play. And sometimes he went into central midfield, he was around the centre spot. And that's where the coaching comes in there over the period of time he's been playing right back, as if to say, I know it's a new trend for fullbacks to go and play in midfield, but not when you're weak at right back. Defensively, you're weak. You do everything you can to make sure that you're not in a position to be isolated, exposed, and he doesn't. He's good when Real Madrid are dominating possession. Everything's in the attacking half and he pops up in those central midfield positions and he's running up and down the right flank and he's overlapping and stuff like that. He can do that. But when you have to switch on those natural instincts of a defender, they're never going to be there. That's not how he was, you know, coached and brought up as from a youngster. So I don't believe Real Madrid can't do anything about the right back, which brings into consideration, do they go all out to get Trent Alexander-Arnold? Do they get another right back? Do they get one on loan and keep it Alexander-Arnold for the summer? Is someone going to come on loan? Probably they will, to Real Madrid for 6 months and go on loan. But it'll be someone who's not needed from another club, so you might not be getting the best quality.
But they need a body, as it were, or two.
Yes.
You know, both. Yeah, even if it's not. Just, you know, I mean, off the top of my head, you know, going through, sign a player from La Liga. You don't have to sign some kind of world superstar.
Yeah. There'll be a better right back in La Liga available.
Yeah.
That they can buy for 5-10 million.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then Carvajal comes back from injury.
Yeah.
That 5-10 million one is probably good for cover.
Yeah.
But then what do you do with Trent Alexander-Arnold? You probably don't sign him.
I still think you do. I think you can operate with two right backs. Carvajal can play centre back. They're so short of bodies in defensive areas. I think that they should have signed David Garcia. I don't know how he's done in. I think he's gone to Saudi, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Players of that, Real Madrid could level. Easily sign players of that ability.
Would do a good job at that level.
Yeah.
That would be similar to Nacho.
Yeah.
Reliable, consistent. Defensive know-how. They are defenders. They like the art of defending. Pessimistic defenders, as Ancelotti calls them. And that's what they needed.
Yeah.
They don't have to spend 80 million or 100 million on every single player they buy.
Yeah, that's the thing. It doesn't have to be a world superstar. Just get
and
some...
And Real Sensio has to come into consideration as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Well enough to suggest that he's a better centre-back than Tchouaméni. Not a better player than Tchouaméni, when Tchouaméni's in form. But he's a better centre-back than Tchouaméni. They might need to put the reins on him a little bit in terms of his aggressive attitude.
Yes.
I said last week he's been compared to Sergio Ramos. During the week, he's now being compared to Nacho, which I kind of think is more realistic. Ramos was a legend. Mm. Nacho, he could do a Nacho. He could be there for the next 10 years. Let's see if he could play right back.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks mobile enough to be able to do that. That might be another option for Ancelotti, but he's reluctant to put a young player ahead of a senior player, irrespective of playing him in his natural position as opposed to playing someone like Tchouaméni in their not natural position. I'm pretty confident that Asensio would be a better right back than Lucas Vasquez, just because his instincts are he's a defender.
Yeah.
He might get embarrassed occasionally when he's up against the top class winger that takes him on because he's centre back and he might not be as mobile as a right back. But I think his defensive instincts would be preferable to having a player that doesn't really want to defend, that wants to play in that attacking mode and hope that his teammates can dig him out. They get on the nerves of the centre backs of Real Madrid that sometimes he's not even there. And you see when Rafinha scores the header, the centre backs are looking around and going, well, what was you doing? And he's, I don't know, I was just running back. It is that type of thing. It's quite unusual to see.
It's never occurred to me to learn how to play as a right back, even though I've been doing it for 8 years.
Exactly. And we keep saying he's a winger, but he's been playing long enough at right back to have improved defensively. But that's the case when you play for Real Madrid and you dominate most games, but every now and then you come up against a Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, or you know, might be a team that's poor, but with a really good winger. That's when it's highlighted.
Yeah, so, and I suppose what's always happened is that Danny Carvajal has played those games.
Danny Carvajal is the best in the world. Yeah. Again, I've chucked that best in the world out there, but he's proved it internationally, Champions League stuff, at everything that you need from him. He's everything you want from a right back. He's a nasty sod. He's competitive. He's energetic. He's fit. He's good going forward. He's different class defensively. He's everything you need in a right back, and he's massively missed. So we can criticise Real Madrid. They're unlucky with the injuries they've had this season. They coped a bit last season somehow and had an incredible season, and we all expected better. But you know, Militao gets injured again, and then Danny Carvajal gets injured. Alaba hasn't recovered. It's a problem, and they thought they could get away with. They may well do. They may well. It'd be interesting. Do you think they'll go and get anyone? I don't. We're all saying they should. I don't think they will.
I suppose if I had to bet money on it, I'd say that no, they won't make a signing, and they will justify it. Oh, no, we couldn't. And I honestly think they don't do the scouting properly. Yeah. I honestly think that they don't. They couldn't tell you.
It's a structural scouting policy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Around you. It's, yeah. We need this. Let's
but go we all know those players. We all know who Trent Alexander-Arnold is.
Exactly. It's not the hardest job in the world to be Round Madrid scout. Second probably to Athletic Bilbao's head scout. But Real Madrid, top draw.
He's just got a bus pass. He's never been on an aeroplane.
We've got money. Let's top draw. Let's get the best right backs in the world. Yeah. And we can get him free.
Yeah.
And I did read Ancelotti 2 weeks ago say it's Alexander-Arnold or nothing. Now, whether this game has changed his mind, I don't know.
Yeah. Because they did take him off, didn't they? They actually subbed him. And it was, which was basically, I was thinking, surely, yeah. You now know you've got to get more defenders in. Anyway, can we talk about Barca's financial situation? Got a couple of questions. Now, Jack, congratulations, by the way. They've had their twins and doing well. So that's good.
Lovely.
His question, how many competitive advantages do Real Madrid and Barcelona need? Despite the improvements over the old TV revenue distribution model, it's still far less equitable than England, Germany and Italy and other top leagues. Even with this major advantage in annual TV revenue, Barca still keep insisting on pushing the sustainability framework to its limits and beyond. Now it's been demonstrated that they can overspend, break the rules and get away with it. Laporta's obnoxious celebration upon hearing the news that both players, so Olmo and Victor, could be registered, for me, encapsulated the whole unedifying circus. Spanish football, for me, remains the finest incarnation of the sport. When it comes to the integrity of the competition, though, it could hardly qualify as a major league. Tapiwa also says, what fascinates me about Laporta is why he keeps using the maximum possible credit available. It's like a person who's irresponsible with a credit card. If the bank gives you a limit of 30k, it doesn't mean you have to spend the entire 30k. That's a good point. If you know you're only good for 7, then common sense dictates that you only send the 7. And you can handle that rather than spending the entire 30 just because it's there. It's a good point. You'll never be elected as the president of Barcelona.
Yeah.
Darren, he makes a point. So the transfer strategy. So all of these came in before this Laporta speech this morning. So Darren's point, the transfer strategy ever since the FFP rules came in can be defined in one word: scramble. Worth remembering, Ferran Torres' transfer fee, £50 million, came with favourable conditions. So Barca effectively didn't have to start paying anything for 6 months and then instalments of £10 million for 5 years. But when it came to Man City re-signing Gundogan, Barca tried to get a fee. And City pointed out they still owed money for Torres. So this is literally the word detailed strategic plan. Some of the other stuff I was saying was a bit me reading between the lines of Laporta's stuff. But he did say a detailed strategic plan. Darren continues, clubs know they can hold Barca over a barrel because their finances are so desperate. Atleti played the long game with Griezmann and won spectacularly, sold for €120 million, bought back for €20 million a couple of years later. He references an article by Graham Hunter detailing a lot. So there's a lot of detail behind this. And he says, Laporta's biggest problem is that he's incredibly thin-skinned and irrationally reacts on his emotions as a result. And he gives the details of how he treated Xavi, you know, the whole Xavi's in, Xavi's out, Xavi's out kind of
cringy, so, wasn't it? When Xavi said he was staying.
Yeah.
And they hugged each other out. I looked at that and thought, nah, that's not sincere.
Yeah.
He's pulling the knife out, but he's temporarily.
And then Darren also points out one thing, that when they open the camp now, of course, it's not going to be full. They're opening it bit by bit. Yeah. So, but Laporta is saying they're back on one-to-one. So, you know, money that they get in, they can spend.
Alarmingly, though, and I hope it's not true, this will be the biggest example of a cock-up by Barcelona if they accept 30-odd million euros from Ronald Araujo from Juventus. Yeah. That's the rumour. What are they thinking? That, I mean, A, don't sell him.
Yeah.
And you have to. And B, don't sell him unless it's for double that.
Yeah.
It's got to be double.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah.
So don't, if it's 30-odd million and Juventus is the only, I can't believe that's the only option. There'll be every big club in Europe, every good team in Europe we'll look at that and think, how much? Oh, we'll have some of that. You know, it's that's ridiculous if they do that just to get a few quid in.
Yeah.
And think they can get away with Kubasi, Nigo Martinez and Christensen, but they can't let go of Araujo for that. As I say, if it's 80 million plus, I can kind of get that in their current predicament. And all this strategy is built around getting back in the new stadium. And then the financial world changes for Barcelona completely. Bit by bit, there will be more, the capacity will be increased. I would hope by the next start of next season, it's full capacity. I doubt it, but you would hope it's been long enough then to have finished at the summer. It's all completely done and they're getting 100,000 in. And
yeah,
people
I don't
will
think
go
so.
To watch the games, people will go to visit the new stadium, and then they're back in the game again and they're back on level terms. The revenue increase then will put them in all these problems.
The bad news, Darren says it will be another year or two before the top tier is completed and the roof. So,
who have they got building this? Seriously, I mean, that's historic, isn't it? Record breaking, the longest time to rebuild a stadium,
except Valencia, but yeah.
And I think Atletico Madrid took a while, didn't they? I think there was a similar problem at Atletico Madrid years ago, but this, that's ridiculous. If they do, then they've got these problems going to hang around for a lot longer.
But Laporta declares it all done. The La Liga are off their back.
If you get 60,000, if you can start getting 60,000 in the stadium, that goes away.
Yeah, but you still, Tapia's point is still valid, isn't it? It's still, don't spend money you haven't got.
Oh, totally. I mean, Dani Olmo, we all agree, is a super player. But there are other players that fulfil that role already at Barcelona. And it's not a major surprise that he's not starting. I mean, I've lavished praise on Gavi, Pedri and Casado. So what happens to Dani Olmo? He's not going to play instead of Lamine Yamal, Rafinha, maybe Lewandowski. It might be the sense that centre-forward position.
If they were in the Champions.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Champions League final, and they're all fit. Does Olmo get in? Probably doesn't, does he? Probably on the bench, isn't he?
Yes. Yes.
And he's like, I agree with you. Absolutely. We've given him loads of praise when he came in. He's a clever player. He's a lovely player. 60 million euros.
And he'd be on the bench with Ferran Torres and Fermin Lopez as well, who can perform similar roles.
Mm.
So it wasn't drastically needed.
Mm.
But it was a signing they couldn't refuse, apparently.
Yeah. Couldn't help. Yeah. Couldn't help himself.
Yeah. And I'm seeing them linked with Marcus Rashford, by the way.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know whether that's good PR because he's been linked with Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, and Barcelona, and Milan seem to be the favourites. I think I'm looking at Real Madrid. No, they don't need Marcus Rashford.
No, it's not.
Atletico Madrid, Simeone, and then Marcus Rashford. Not a chance, unless the deal is incredibly attractive.
Yeah, but then don't.
It's 300 grand a week. Man United are going to pay 280 of it.
Yeah, but then if you're Rashford, don't sign for a club who only want you because you're cheap, because he needs to play. And like you say, when you look at Real Madrid, they're not short of another.
No, they don't need him. And Barcelona, why would they? Where's the? So I'm reading these reports in the British press, and I'm finding it hard to justify that Barcelona, despite the ridiculous decisions that Laporta makes at times, I'm finding it not totally unbelievable that Rashford might be on Barcelona's list.
Yeah.
I don't see that one. But who knows with Barcelona? As I said, if the deal is that attractive that you can only on loan for nothing, we'll pay most of his wages. It's... But I think that would be a big surprise if I see Marcus Rashford in Spanish football.
Yes. Right. Let's talk about the rest of... We'll do all the rest of Spanish football now. We've got 8 La Liga games, only 14 goals. They faded into the shadows of the Clásico, as almost instructed by the powers.
We made a point, didn't we, just before we come on air about puts it in the shadow. 8 La Liga games.
Yeah.
This has been an incredibly stop-start season so far. We've had three.
They all are, though, now, aren't they? And like I say, the Champions League, literally, when I looked at Atleti's fixtures, literally next week, the Champions League is back. Oh, yeah. Honestly. I don't need the Champions League back just now. Honestly, I don't feel I need Champions League. I love the Champions League. Don't need a game next week.
But we've had this three international breaks.
Yeah.
A Christmas break, a Copa del Rey break last weekend as well. And the Super Cup.
Yeah.
And I just want to get a run of games going now in La Liga.
Yeah. Yeah.
We keep stopping and starting the season, keep looking at the league table, teams lack consistency. Villarreal, we talk about their game against Real Sociedad, their performance, they played
the league table. It suits your need for tidiness. The league table currently is everyone's played the same, haven't they?
We've got the midwinter, the middle of the season, winter champions at this game, which we'd all played. 19.
Yeah.
That kind of got overshadowed because of the Super Cup, which is two representatives from their La Liga positions, the winner and the runners-up, and the two from the Spanish Cup. And yet, I still find it baffling that it's played at this time of the season out in Saudi Arabia while there's 8 league games going on that weekend.
Anyway.
La Liga should do more to protect their... The domestic campaign.
Yeah.
And it's a product, it has brands and stuff like that. And I hate all that stuff. So I went around it and said that, the domestic campaign.
Yeah. But they're definitely not alone in failing to protect their own league.
People were saying, why is this game being played now? Why is it being played? Or why are the three games being played in Saudi? We all know why. And then people saying, you can laugh at the Spanish because they're playing out there, but the FA Cup final will be out there Monday. And I can see that. And then,
Why can't Tamworth have their replay, Terry? That's
in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Why isn't Mansfield Wigan being played in Qatar? That's what I demand.
Why is it being played at a time where it peak viewing hours in the Middle East that they can watch Mansfield versus Wigan in the FA Cup? The weird and wonderful world of football that we live in at the moment.
Anyway, Atletico Madrid.
I love a Clásico. It was a fantastic game. But there's loads of reasons why I don't think it should be the case.
Let me get to Atletico Madrid. Atletico Madrid beat Osasuna by 1-0. 14 wins in a row is incredible, isn't it? At times it's hard work watching them still, isn't it? But... Yep. But it's been an astonishing run.
They were out the title race, and we were talking about top form. We were talking about Simeone maybe being his last season because they'd invested all this money and it looked a mess. And slowly but surely, he figured out that he was the one that was confusing everything. They changed the system. They stuck to a system and he started sticking to a regular team selection. And things just evolved from there to the extent... This game wasn't hugely different, though. The first half, again, not a lot happening. It was Osasuna rested some players because of their Copa del Rey match in midweek against Athletic Club. So Budimir didn't start. Amar Arroz didn't start. And Atleti made hard work of it in the first half. It wasn't great football, but they get the goal in the second half and then Osasuna really didn't ever look like threatening and making a comeback. But it's an unbelievable stat. It really is. And Alvarez is now in top form. He gets the goal in this one. He's got 13 goals in all competitions this season. His absence highlights how much he's missed at Manchester City. And it was a struggle for him at the start of the season because we had him part of that confusing team selection where Simeone out the blue played him on the left. And you could see Alvarez didn't like it. You could see him thinking, hey, you paid 80 million for me and I'm the main man. I've left Man City to come here and you're playing me out of position on the left wing. And Alvarez is not daft. He knows if he plays on the left wing, he's not going to score too many goals and he's going to get slaughtered because he doesn't score goals. Mm. But eventually, Alvarez was moved into a central attacking position. And the partnership agreement has meant the fact that Solo is on the bench, Correa is on the bench. But the consistent team selection leads to these partnerships. It leads to Griezmann and Alvarez hitting it off and finding a partnership. And, you know, they're not both centre forwards. Alvarez is the one up, the highest up the pitch. Griezmann has freedom to move around, and everything's working for Atletico Madrid and Simeone. It's an astonishing turnaround. It really is. I think there was 12 points difference between them and Barcelona at one stage, and now they're 6 points ahead of Barcelona.
So if you are drawing up, we don't do betting advice though, because it's too complicated and you can lose too much money. But who are the favourites to win La Liga?
That's a really difficult one. I probably would lean towards Real Madrid.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Mm. Despite all that we've said
about the conversation we just had.
They'll be okay in most of those games. You know, there's other games that they'll find it tough. But if they were to play, I'm looking around the rest. Atleti is going to be one of those big games where Vasquez might get isolated. If they've got centre-back, that might be, it will be a problem. Barcelona in the second game will be a problem. Would they probably still have enough, you know, to overcome Betis, Villarreal, Real Sociedad with Lucas Vasquez at right back? The answer is probably yes, to be honest.
Yeah.
I probably would go lean towards Real Madrid. I look at Barcelona's performance at the weekend and suggest that if they play like that for the rest of the season, then they should be favourites. But 6 point gap is significant, and five behind Real Madrid.
Yeah. So, although I don't know how significant that is if they play like they played the other day, because they did at the start of the season and they just blew everyone away in a couple of weeks. That could be gone within a couple of weeks. Or Atleti have won 14 games.
Atleti was bad for them. That was significant, wasn't it? The recent defeat against Atleti, when you look at the points difference now.
Yeah.
So the next game will be against Atletico away from home. They've got to play Real Madrid at home. So there's a chance for them to claw points, claw the deficit back, but they have to be consistent in the league, and they can't keep dropping. Every point they drop now is going to be a problem for Barcelona.
Yeah.
They'll Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid will win the majority of their games.
Yeah. Real Sociedad beat Villarreal by a goal to nil. It wasn't the best of games, was it? It was settled by a brilliant goal, though.
We delayed the podcast because we thought this is a Monday night game worth talking about, worth watching. It's significant in terms of, you know, as it turns out, Real Sociedad are seventh, Villarreal fifth position still. So it was a big enough game for us to think, no, we can't ignore that one on Monday night. And we should have done. It was dreadful. I mean, there was not a shot on target in the first half from either team. There was very few shots attempted from either team in the first half. And Suchi hits the post with one, but I think it might have been disallowed anyway because there was a foul in the build-up. It was obvious that VAR would have picked it up and it would have been disallowed if it had gone in. So it was dreadful. And Villarreal hadn't played for 3 weeks because they got knocked out of the cups, and that showed. They're untidy at the moment, Villarreal. They're lacking the consistency. We criticised defending, the amount of goals they've conceded, but they didn't look like scoring in this one. Gerard Moreno comes off the bench, so I'm not sure why he's on the bench, to be honest. I know Tierno Barry has done particularly well. Pep Gay did reasonably well in the game last night, but he's an upgrade, Gerard Moreno. He's a talisman when he comes on, and I think that Marcelino, maybe I would suggest, if he's fit and ready, then lean on him, you know, play him.
Yeah.
I know you're always worried about him picking up another injury, because that's been the case the last couple of seasons, but he makes a difference. But Real Sociedad, their go-to player was the game changer.
Takakubo.
Magic goal.
Yeah. Comes from, because he was literally, when he first involved, he's in the right back position, isn't he? And then he sort of comes forward and they break from halfway.
But Oyarzabal lumps it forward.
Yeah.
And I'm all for that. In behind for a quick player that's got skill.
Yeah. So he's even quicker than Dani Parejo, who's the only remaining defender.
That was the big surprise. So it was a wise counter attack. It wasn't one with three or four players involved in the build-up and great movement off the ball. It was just, there's an obvious ball over the top for the quickest player on the pitch. And he's got a great skill level as well. And he took the goal really well. And that was the difference. He was the difference. But it was a dreadful game. It really was. And as I said, it looked like Biro hadn't played for 3 weeks. What alarmed me after the game was Taki Kubo. The first thing he did in the interview was moan about the Monday night kickoff.
He did, didn't he? Yeah. He didn't want the interview to last very long either. First thing he said was, don't make it too long. And then he complained about the Monday night, didn't he?
But you saw there's huge gaps all over the stadium as well.
Yeah. It was a protest, wasn't it? And I forget, but it was something else was on, wasn't it? And they didn't want the game to be played on the Monday night.
Right, moaned about playing on Friday night. Their supporters, they made a protest. I kind of get it. In the winter, it's not ideal to be going out. It was at 9 o'clock kickoff local time, and in San Sebastian, it's 11 o'clock finish. It's a school night, work night. I get all that, but it did look like both teams had the playing on a Monday night.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, the whole occasion, wasn't it?
I was thoroughly depressed by the end of that match, having looked forward to it so much. And we spoke and we said, no, we should keep the podcast till Tuesday because it's a big game. And it was awful. By the end of it. It's been a long weekend of football action as well, watching everything. I've watched some FA Cup stuff. I went down with cramp at Upper State on Sunday night. My wife pulled her out to... I was laid on the sofa and she had to bend my foot, you know, as you do when you see a player go down with cramp, then to watch the NFL. It was a full-on, exhausting weekend in sport.
Was that stress? Were you tensing yourself through the whole Spurs-Tamworth game? Is that what it was? 90 minutes?
Bizarrely, I was quite content with it, to be honest. It was the world's worst pitch, AstroTurf, a little bit of frost on it. Players were, you could see the Spurs players, we've got a million injuries, and you're thinking, they're looking at it and thinking, I don't really want to be playing on this. They nearly went out in the last minute, but they win 3-0, and I'm quite content that no one picked up an injury, and no one's going to remember the game other than Tamworth fans. So,
yes,
it's that time of the year where we get those pitches, isn't it? I'd like to see more of those. I'm sure it happens in the Copa del Rey. I mean, there are some Copa del Rey games this week and some unfamiliar teams in it still. And their pitches at times are AstroTurf with a million lines on it and stuff like that. And they're not the best stadiums and such, but it's just something you have to overcome, to be honest.
So people might have missed Carlos Corberan being the Valencia manager. They got a 1-1 draw with Sevilla. Mamardashvili messed it up, really, didn't they? 93rd minute goal conceded, otherwise they'd have got a win.
Pedrosa's attempt, it might have even been going wide. It's going across the goal, so it might have even been going wide. But Mamardashvili wasn't his first mistake in the game. He'd made another one before, so he's been out injured. It's taken a little time to get up to speed again. But it was an error, and it was the 93rd minute of the game, in a game that probably Valencia should have won, to be honest. I mean, Rioja scores his goal. That was a goalkeeping error, in my opinion, as well. Good play from...
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Rioja, Luis Rioja. That's the type of play we're talking about Real Madrid signing, isn't it? Not Luis Rioja, but Valencia went out and got a really good, solid La Liga player for next to nothing. And he's been a good addition to the squad. So that opens the scoring. It's Sevilla. It was more of a struggle for Sevilla than it was for Valencia, but ultimately Valencia dropped the points at the end because of an error by a player that is normally super reliable. So I think Ruben Vargas made the difference when he came on for Sevilla in the number 10 position. It's going to be, he's the new signing from Augsburg, $2 or $3 million, I think. He made a difference. One or two players coming back from injury, so maybe things might get a little bit smoother for Pimienta now. But that was a valuable point for Sevilla because Valencia should have won that game.
Yeah. Rayo continued there. I mean, super form, Rayo. Sort of gone under the radar a little bit.
Always do.
Yeah.
We always come out with the same cliches. Oh, it's difficult place, Vallecas. It hasn't been so far this season. It's been quite comfortable for teams going there and getting points. But they've turned that form around now. And they're being really consistent. They're ninth, 25 points. They were possible relegation candidates because of their form last season, which led to Nico Perry's getting the job in the first place. He kept them up, and this season it's going to be no problem keeping them in the division again. And they have the personality of a Rayo team again. I mean, I look at Rayo and every single player works his socks off. The one player that we thought might make a difference, skill, technique and stuff like that, was gone. Never played.
James is gone, everybody.
It's like he was never there, to be perfectly honest.
Was it 140 minutes of La Liga action? He's gone.
It just emphasises the weird world of football, though, doesn't it? Where someone thought it was a good idea, but the manager didn't. And that was clear from the start. Mm. I mean, the fanfare that came with James Rodriguez coming back to La Liga, coming back to Rayo Vallecano, it was reminiscent of when Falcao went to Rayo Vallecano. You're thinking, oh, the manager must be really happy with this, otherwise he wouldn't have sanctioned it. And then, bang, no, he's not playing, he's not fit yet, he's not up to speed. One excuse after the other, till we all finally realised that, Nico Perez didn't want him.
He's never going to be up to speed.
Hard enough.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what Rayo do. Every single man runs their legs off in every single game. And that didn't fit. I thought maybe there was Nico Perez thought, if I have nine of those outfield players doing that, maybe we could have the magic of Hammers. But he didn't. He didn't think that way. So why someone foisted him on Nico Perez in the first place, I have no idea. And now he's gone.
Yeah. Girona got a win, 91st minute win, their only shot on target in the game away to Alaves.
They got battered in this game by Alaves. They really did. And to the extent that when you see Michel at the end of the game, he's almost apologising to Caldet that, oh, I'm sorry we did that. And it was a defensive mistake as well, which led to the goal. It was a ball that should have been cleared, and it was miscleared and miscued, and it went straight to Solis, who tucked it away. And suddenly you're looking at Girona, they're flying again. I mean, this was a lucky win, fortunate win, didn't deserve it. But they're in a really good, healthy position, and we're talking about them possibly challenging for European football again, which is, considering what's happened to them this season, considering the extra load on the players with the games and the Champions League, and there's still two to go, and they're pretty much out of that. That's going to be a tough couple of games for them. Their league position is commendable, to be honest.
Yeah. They've got these...
Caldet was a controversial choice because Luis Garcia Plaza gets the sack, and everyone agrees that was a tough call.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of a blip. He got them up, kept them up. They finished 10th. This season, half a dozen games about a win or something like that, sacked. Caldet comes in. It's three draws and a defeat, so he hasn't won one yet either. So I think there hasn't been a quick turnaround there. So keep your eye on that. If Alaves were that quick to sack Luis Garcia Plaza, if Caldet doesn't pick up a win soon, irrespective of the fact they should have won this game, Alaves have been known in the past to make more than one change per season. So maybe, I don't know if Luis Garcia Plaza has got another job yet, but there's my prediction. Luis Garcia Plaza back for the last 10 games of the season to rescue Alaves. And I'm not joking.
Yeah, but they're a point outside the relegation zone. Espanyol 1, Leganés 1. Probably did them a favour, didn't it? Although Valladolid beat Betis. Betis, the team that just can't get the season going.
I'm looking at, Espanyol, Leganés, decent start for Espanyol. Leganés are doing all right, actually. They're at the newly promoted teams, they're doing okay. 19 points. Avoid relegation is their mission, and I think they'll do that. Betis Valladolid is Diego Coca. They play better. They weren't useless, which they have been for most of this season. And suddenly you look at them and Marcus Andre's playing up front, you think, why didn't he ever play up front? Why was he always on the bench or, you know, left out by the previous manager, Pezzolano? He's a decent player. So they look better, but Betis, I think there needs to be a rethink on the system of Betis, particularly now Lo Celso and Isco are fit and they're playing together. What's happened now, it's like a 4-2-3-1 with Abde playing wide on the left, Isco in the middle, and then Lo Celso playing slightly to the right, but not wide right. And then you've got the weekend was Bakambu instead of Vitor Roque. I'm just thinking there might be a time for a tactical change from Pellegrini.
Yeah.
I think he'd be reluctant to. He doesn't. I mean, in the past, at Villarreal, particularly played a 4-4-2. I'm not saying it, this should be 4-4-2. I think this should be, you know, possibility of 3-5-2 and get Lo Celso and Isco in the central midfield positions with a Cardoso playing in between them or something, or maybe a 4-3-2-1 with Isco and Lo Celso behind the striker, rather than what we see, the 4-2-3-1 with Abde wide left, Lo Celso tucking in on the right. They've got attacking fullbacks that could perform the wing back or attacking fullback positions. Rui Bell would be perfect for that. So I think there needs to be a tactical change because they don't create chances, they don't score goals, and they're losing to teams that they shouldn't lose to. And this 10 now.
And last one, Getafe won at Las Palmas, who were in great form, but of course don't have many points because of the terrible run at the start of the season. David Surya with a penalty save was probably crucial, wasn't it? It was a brilliant save for that. And then Borja Mayoral scored coming on. Yeah, coming first La Liga game, isn't it, since his injury?
Yes. So it's like a new signing. They've been struggling all season with who's going to play up front. Interesting player. Koba da Costa, another one. There's that Cristentus Uche, who they bought from the lower leagues, which we don't often see in La Liga. And Koba da Costa is one of those as well that's had a weird career. Spanish, and they signed him from Conquenza, lower league team. He had a spell playing in Slovenia as well. He's only 22, and he came up with the first goal. He looked an interesting player. So, you know, as I said, we see lots of players that don't play in La Liga but get promoted, and then we say, why wasn't he playing in La Liga before now? You know, mid-20s, never played in the top flight. His team get promoted, and there's a good player. And when you think there's two full-time professional leagues in Spain and the rest of them are not, the level's below, there must be players there. And Getafe are the one team at the moment that are picking out the best of those, giving them opportunities and flourishing. So that's a massive win. First away win in the season for Getafe.
Yes. Right. We will leave it there. That's the end of the La Liga roundup and the Copa Supercopa roundup as well. So there's a Copa del Rey coming up in the week. We'll be back with Patreons. We'll be back with another round of La Liga and some probably looking ahead to the European games. They're back. Can you believe it? And we'll see you for that. So thank you for your support, everybody, and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.